The following program is sponsored by Friends of Life Outreach International. Coming up, Shauna Nyquist encourages us to reclaim the art of sharing life around the table.
When we're isolated, we believe that we're the only ones who are struggling.
Absolutely.
With whatever it is.
We definitely believe that.
And I think the nature of pain is that we isolate. I don't know if you've, I've found that to be true in my life. When I have had a broken heart, I feel like I'm the only one and everyone else is happy. Joy tends to be the opposite. When you're happy, you think everybody's happy. When you just get engaged, everybody's wearing diamonds. When you're pregnant, everybody's pregnant, you know.
Next on Life Today.
I'm Betty, and this is Jane.
You know, we have a lot of heroes around the country, a lot of people we admire, we appreciate because of the contribution that they have made to the benefit of every person that their message or life has touched. Bill Hybels is one of those people like that. Willow Creek Community Church in the greater Chicago area has been a friend for a long time. He blessed so many people in our conferences here in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, also in Canada, and has just imparted truth. He said something, Betty, at the time in my life that I was going through what I would describe, I guess, in a polite term as burnout. It was really basically total destruction from doing far too much. Yes, doing, you know, the work of God and yet being out of the will of God because I was operating in the gifts of the Spirit and the gifting of the Spirit without the fruit of the Spirit prevailing. And Bill talked about how preachers make a big mistake of always rapid charging their batteries and not trickle charging. That contributed to the transforming work of God in my own life that led me to really many directions that were very positive. His daughter is a truly anointed person, a communicator, a writer, a fabulously beautiful book. Her name is Shauna Nyquist. And she's written a book called Bread and Wine. Now, that aroused my curiosity. You know, pastor's daughter writing about bread and wine. What are we going to do? Want to learn a little bit more social etiquette? Are we going to learn how to eat more? I don't know many church folks who have a problem eating more. But I really was curious about it, and I began to just really look through it. And I thought, my goodness, she's got an incredible gift. She's got a gift from God that she's sharing, not only as she has written it, but as she communicates it, in light of what God's put on her heart to write, to also speak and share. Would you welcome Shauna to Life Today? Shauna, we're so glad to have you.
So glad. Thank you.
You didn't happen to begin writing because you were a preacher's kid. Did that inspire you to write? Did that have anything to do with the journey at all?
Well, first of all, thanks for those sweet things you said about my dad. He says hello to both of you. And, you know, I don't know what it's been like for your kids, but I think sometimes when you grow up with parents who do something really, really well at an extraordinarily high level and God uses them in a really unusual way, it's easy to think, I could never, how do I find my way in this family? How do I do something that's even close to that? And I think that's the wrong question. I think the question is, what did God make me uniquely to do, regardless of the family that I was born into?
Exactly.
And so I'm totally not a preacher. I'm not a leader. I'm not a church leader. I'm not a pastor. I'm a reader and I'm a writer and I'm a storyteller. And so for me, the words that I want to say are not words that you'll hear necessarily in a pulpit. They're words that show themselves in the form of stories. That's how God has used, stories are what have bound me to God and taught me about Him and healed me and challenged me. And so to be a storyteller feels like a high calling to me.
Well, I think it's great. It is a gift from God, and I'm glad that you've recognized it and you're committed to fulfill. Now, bread and wine, I've already kind of alluded to that. Are we talking about going out to dinner, or what exactly are we doing here? Help our viewers understand, because I won't have any trouble getting them to eat bread.
Right.
All right. And not a wine, there may be some discussions about that, you know, because from a Baptist background, there'll be lengthy discussions about it. Go ahead.
Well, I'm not a Baptist, But it's not about wine. It's about communion. It's about the idea that there's this very sacred practice that we observe in our churches. And I love it. I love taking communion in my church. I have great memories of sitting with my parents or sitting with my husband, with my close friends as the plate is passed. At the same time, though, when I go back and I read that story, that story didn't take place in a church, and it wasn't led by a pastor. It was a man and his friends, his family, his community, and it was in a home, and it was a meal, not an activity that we do in the course of our church life. And I think that's significant for us. We both know, we all know how fast ministry life can be. And how fast regular life can be. You know, sometimes when I get to the end of a week, I realize that most of my interactions with the people I love have been text messages or running down the hall at preschool or passing the neighborhood and waving or seeing each other at church just for 2 minutes. Mm-hmm. And what I crave is what I think Jesus and his friends experienced in that upper room. The time to be together, to look one another in the eye, to share stories, the full version, not just the one you catch up really fast. I think we have essentially wandered away from the table, and I mean both the communion table and the family table. I think really great things happen, sacred things happen, when we gather around the table to share life together and to tell the truth about what God's doing or to tell the truth about what's difficult. I think he can do extraordinary things through one another, through each of us in each other's lives, when we gather at the table.
So when you wrote the book, what were you seeking to inspire people to do? Because you have written beautifully. It's fascinating. There's not a part in the book that doesn't capture interest, just like your ability to communicate right here. What do you want the reader to get, and what do you want to happen? You've already alluded to it, but be very specific what you're hoping for.
Yeah. So in the very last chapter of the book, it starts off and it says, this is what I want you to do. Tell someone you love them and dinner's at 6. And that's really it. I want people more than, it would be a great compliment to me if someone read the book and said, wow, she's a great writer. But I've been surprised. What has really moved me is when I've gotten emails from readers and they've said, I put down your book and I invited people over for my first dinner party ever. And I learned how to make salad dressing for my first time. I didn't even know you could do that, you know? I think the lost art of gathering around the table is one worth reclaiming. And so more than people shifting their ideas about the table, it's really gratifying to me. I feel like I've done what I came to do when someone says, I've never invited people into my home. I'm nervous. My house isn't very nice. I don't know how to cook. I pushed those things aside, and I created sacred space around our table. And something extraordinary happened when we all showed up, when we got over our nervousness, when we got over the fact that the food wasn't perfect or the space wasn't perfect or the kids were going crazy. And we showed up anyway to see and hear each other. That's what would make me feel like I did what I set out to do.
And I believe what you're talking about is that fellowship time, that catching up time. But it has to be, you say, sharing your heart with people. It has to be those surrounding you that you trust, that you have a heart, a likeness in heart with, mm-hmm. that you feel safe to share and pour out your difficulties or your joys, whatever. Isn't that right? Isn't that correct?
Totally. And I think some of why I'm talking about getting into the habit of spending this mm-hmm. kind of time with people is because you have to log a lot of time together to get to that point in friendship. And so some of our most really life-changing experiences of community have happened when we've said, we're going to do this every week, every Wednesday at 7 o'clock. And you know how it is with friends and schedules and kids. Some weeks you go home and you're like, I don't know why we did that. We did not talk about anything of substance. You did it because you're logging the hours and the minutes for when you do need to have those deep conversations. A lot of the time we spend together in friendship is storing up for when things fall apart so that we can really meet each other's needs in those moments. And so that's why I think the rhythm of life around the table is important, not just for those significant moments, so that you have it in the bank when those significant moments happen.
You're building trust factor. When I've talked to you and when I've looked at what you've put in the book, we've talked about how the church needs to be this as a family, mm-hmm. where we really offer the people a feeling of a community that is one of love and safety and security. When we started Life Today, the thing that I heard so clearly from the Lord, because I had stood in pulpits and coliseums and stadiums preaching to tens of thousands of people, and the thing that the Lord showed me that he wanted me to do and Betty to do together, which she had never really spent any time talking, but she had certainly spent this time in the family room. We believe the Lord said, call the family in the family room, help people get to know the Father so they can behave more like my family. And that is precisely what the viewers have told us. They see something going on mm-hmm. in our relationship that we actually didn't just live together and exist for 50 years, but that we actually mm-hmm. had a relationship that's meaningful and expressive, and that there was that safety where I could bear my heart and my soul, she could handle it, she could mine, we would work it together, and then we wanted that to be something others were invited into, and they feel that. They feel that when they see us, they feel like we're family. I hear you saying that. There is something that God is saying to every one of us, Father, family, one another, trust one another, communicate that you can be trusted and they can trust you, and open up and find the security and safety that God wants us to have. I hear you saying that. Am I reading it right?
Absolutely. I really do think that friendship or community is one of God's greatest evidences of Himself on earth. I think, you know, there are some people who are very moved by nature or by animals or by seeing the stars. I am very moved by the mechanism of friendship. When I watch two people care for each other well, when I watch one friend help to mend the broken heart of another friend, you know, we had a series of losses. I had multiple miscarriages and a long series, season of infertility. And in the same way that some people see the face of God when they look out at the night sky, I saw the face of God in the men and the women who cared for us in our deepest pain, who came to our house, who sat with us sometimes silently, who the girlfriends who held my hand when there was nothing left to say. God gives us representation of Himself through the people that He puts in our lives. And a lot of times I find, at least in my life, I move so quickly that I miss those sacred opportunities. I could have been sitting for an hour with someone, and instead I was off to do a million things. And so for me, the table is a place where time stops. And I say, I want to be the kind of person who sees everything that there is to see, who listens to the whole story, who doesn't miss what you might not tell me at preschool drop-off because things are so fast. You might not even tell me at church, but you might tell me something in the space of my family room or around my table that really desperately needs to be said. And I think that's why it's important to build our lives around these routines.
You know, you're talking in the book, too, very specifically, and you've said it over and over about, let's have a meal, let's talk. And, you know, I'm trying not to eat much bread, even though bread and butter is really a big temptation. But frankly, you're not going to talk me into going out and having bread and butter because I'm you know, not going to because it's not really good for me. And so I want to know, since you're talking so much about food, have you ever struggled with food? You know, a lot of times when people have a real battle with something, then they overcome it, then they can go ahead and talk about it. But did that ever bother you any? I mean, food, like I just said, bread can just possess me. I mean, I can just eat the whole loaf. You know? If it's good, let's get all of it. You know, if it's a temptation, let's get it behind us. Betty said, yeah, you're getting behind you.
Well, absolutely. You know, I think most people who love food and who love to eat have struggled at one point or another with their weight. And frankly, most women I know have struggled with their weight. We live in a culture that has very narrow messaging for what beauty looks like. We don't celebrate 100 different kinds of beautiful in our culture.
You're right.
We celebrate about one and it's really little, you know? And so it's difficult to live a sane, spirit-filled, generous, confident life with the messaging that we're constantly given about food. And consequently, sometimes when I talk to women, they say, hey, this book really scares me. I don't want to learn to cook. I don't want to have people around my table. I am terrified of food because it's the enemy, because it's what's going to keep me from looking the way that people want me to look in order to love me more. And I think we have to find a way through that together. We have to find a new way to feed ourselves and to be healthful and kind and accepting and not excessive. But there has to be a middle ground between we're terrified to eat and we can't stop eating. And I find that sometimes when we're willing to join together at the table and talk about this stuff together, we can find a good middle way.
And I think that would be true of any challenge we face in life.
Totally.
The more we can open up and talk about it, I think a lot of people fight basic distraction or attraction to the wrong things, or addictive tendencies, or compulsiveness. And they don't feel like they can sit around and talk about it. And yet everybody in the room's probably got some kind of a problem. They have a very similar problem. They have the same problem. They don't talk about it. We were talking earlier. I said it looks like Alcoholic Anonymous taught the church more about how we help one another appropriately, and spending time together and being honest with one another is a process. This should be the example of the church. And I'm sure the church and Inspiration had a whole lot to do with the positives of Alcoholics Anonymous. All of these things, and I hear you saying, let's behave like a family. You don't even see much of that anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, I think the texting is not really good. All you do is text. I know my kids get it, grandkids get it. Okay, it's the only way I can talk to you. Let's talk. I want to hear your voice. Can you still talk? Did you lose it in college? Have you gotten too old now to our children that you can't talk anymore? Let's talk. I really believe this is what I'm hearing you say. Let's talk. Let's communicate. Yeah. Let's deal with issues. Let's share one another's burdens. Let's be friends. Let's be family. And for heaven's sake, this is what the church needs to be. Am I hearing you right?
You're 1,000%. That's exactly what I think. I think a lot of times when we're isolated, we believe that we're the only ones who are struggling
Absolutely.
With whatever it is.
We definitely believe that.
And I think the nature of pain is that we isolate. I don't know if I've found that to be true in my life. Mm-hmm. When I have had a broken heart, I feel like I'm the only one and everyone else is happy. Joy tends to be the opposite. When you're happy, you think everybody's happy. When you just get engaged, everybody's wearing diamonds. When you're pregnant, everybody's pregnant, you know. But when your heart is broken, you would just swear you're the only one.
Yeah.
But you're never the only one.
Or when you're defeated.
Yeah.
When you got a hang up in a problem that just keeps hanging you up. You feel like I'm the only one. I don't want anybody to know. Mm-hmm. We ought to have that ability to tell it. I've got an issue. Mm-hmm. Let's do it. This is good stuff. Would you say thanks so much to Shauna for sharing with us? Thank you. This is good. It's a beautiful book published by Zondervan. And I think you will treasure it, and I don't think it will cause you to eat too much. I have listened the whole evening, and I'm not going to eat more bread and butter. I'm just not, because I found it wasn't best for me. And I know you understand what I'm saying, part of my process, and I've shared it with Betty, and she helps me with that. So I just think, I hear what you're saying. I thank God for you. You know, Shauna, one of the things that has really, really blessed us is to share out of our blessing and life with those who don't have something that seems so little to us and insignificant, and yet it's huge to them, water. And I want to just say to you, in behalf of millions of people, thank you for giving a cup of water in Jesus' name and many wells of water together. I want you to look in on scenes that I think will move you not only to God, but to express the heart of God, the love of God, literally, the hand of God.
I'll never forget getting that phone call from Life Today asking if I would be willing and available to take another trip with them to India. And as soon as I landed, I knew that a great adventure was ahead of me. I traveled every day for hours out in some of the driest land I've ever seen. The ground itself was crying out for water. And yet I looked around at all of these people that were also crying out for water themselves. And they would take me down to these water holes that they would drink from every single day. And at moments, it took my breath away because I just thought, how could anybody survive this? I think at that moment, as I would look to the heaven and the sun would beam so hot on my face and I would just feel so thirsty myself. So I would sit alongside of the edge and watch little children dip into the water and drink it. And I wanted to stop them. Just stop. Don't drink that. It's killing you. It's filled with death and disease. My heart would cry out to God, what can I do to change this situation? It's always my prayers that somehow I capture their heart and I tell a story of not just of death through the lack of water, but the possibility of life. I stood before drills. I've stood before them as water has sprung up all around me. What an incredible moment. I have seen with my very eyes how our giving has impacted hundreds and thousands of lives. But it took me and it took you, it took all of us having a vision and a hope and bringing them a future through life-giving water.
Boy, there is sorrow overcome with great joy. When you have seen what disease does to little children because they were drinking water they had to have to even live another day, and then to see it destroy their precious little lives, their families, and the grief that can be so easily prevented. Betty, I just love watching that water just come up. And you know, we've got so many pictures of little children and of many women and their family rejoicing when they suddenly just like, it's better than striking oil. I mean, this is real life right now. This is not just the ability to get somewhere. This is the ability to live. And it all happens because somebody with love gives those people a chance at life. I mean, it's a simple thing for us to get water. You know, we've got tap water at home and in restaurants, and it's amazing how many people want to be really sure it's clean, so they go get bottled water from somewhere. You know, I mean, we don't know, but what, they just got it out of the tap somewhere and put a nice label on it and sold it in the stores. The point is this, and of course they didn't do that. I think somebody would probably call their hand. But the point is that we're saying we believe clean water is so important, we go to great extremes to be sure and take care of ourselves. Well, could we not go to the effort together of making a gift of a well? We have targeted 500 areas this year in 12 nations where the missionaries have pointed us to the need. And we believe you want to meet the need. Betty, I'm believing every single person watching will either give $48 or $144, give 10 people water for life the rest of their life, or 30 people water for the rest of their life. Or do what we've been doing with gratitude to God.
You know, James, those that have joined with us before in drilling the water wells, they come back with the response, it's joy unspeakable, because they know that they're doing something that's going to save the life of a child. So if you want to be a part of that and have the expression of love that Jesus would offer them, the clean, pure water, please join with us and let's do this.
And I'm believing they're going to.
I do.
I believe every single person watching is going to do something. Now, can you drill a well? Betty and I have had the joy of doing that. We ask God to let us drill a well. Ask Him. But I tell you what, we started with what we could do while we worked toward the well. And we've been able to give a well. There are couples, there are individuals, there are small businesses, there are churches, Bible study groups that give a well. They're $4,800. Could you do that? I believe you will. The $48... for 10 people, that's where most of the support comes from. There are people who give $1,200. Three others join and we've got a well, or $2,400. At whatever level you can do, please dial the number. Take your bank card, use it like a check. If you do write a check, make it to Life, but call us and tell us what you're sending. Remember, you can go online, lifetoday.org. Special gifts we'll be sending you to say thank you. Thank you for giving the great gift of water for life. Thank you so much for doing it.
Every day, millions of children are forced to make a dreadful choice. Drink filthy, polluted water filled with deadly disease or die from thirst. No child should ever be faced with this decision. The good news is there is a solution. Mission Water for Life is one of the most exciting and viable demonstrations of God's love in the world today. Suffering can end because clean water changes everything. With your gift today, we can establish and drill 500 new water wells for remote villages in over 12 different nations. Your gift of $24 will help provide clean water for 5 people. A gift of $48 will help provide for 10 people. $72 will impact 15 people. And $144 will help provide fresh, clean, disease-free water for 30 people for a lifetime. With your gift, be sure to request Majesty, an inspirational new fully illustrated book that will help you discover the promises behind the many names of God. With your gift of $100 or more, be sure to also request the Names of God pin set, custom crafted with the various names of God and the gifts of the Spirit. Also, please prayerfully consider a gift of $1,200 to help provide water for 250 people, or a gift of $4,800 to help sponsor a complete well. And be sure to request the limited edition 50th anniversary bronze sculpture, Living Water. Please call, write, or make your secure gift online today.
When you look around at the water in front of me, you can see that it is a source of water that is not life-giving. It's so heartbreaking to see some place that is so peaceful, yet is producing such death. It makes you sit back and think, like, what could I do to change this situation? Like, there's got to be a solution. There has to be a solution. And the beautiful thing is that we know that there is a solution, and we have people on the ground right now that can make a difference, but we can't do it ourselves. We need you. If we could come in and drill a well for these people, it would serve over 1,000 people. 1,000 people, one water well. So I'm asking you today, if you would partner with me and do whatever you can, anything will help. Go to the phones, go online, and don't hesitate. I mean, the problem is here and the solution is here. They're both here, but we need you to help. Please, won't you do something today?
This is a great book, Majesty, the promises that are revealed in the names of God in the Bible. Majesty, Jack Hayford wrote the song titled Majesty. Someday we're going to share what Jack Hayford saw when he watched our daughter go into heaven. I really look forward to the time when we'll share that with you. I think it can be used to see millions come to Christ, because no one's going to want to miss it. Bread and Wine, Shauna Nyquist. And it is a treasure, because she does have a remarkable gift. It'll take you far beyond just merely eating together, but that's important too, to be family, the family of God and families together. Would you say thanks to Shauna for sharing with us? Get the book in the bookstores. By the way, do you have a website where people can go and see where you might be speaking?
It's just my name, ShaunaNyquist.com.
Just this name. There it is. There is the website. If you say, hey, we wanted to come and share with us, we like working. That's how you can get hold of us. Thanks so much for helping us share.
Next week, join James and Betty as they talk with special guests from the Women of Faith conferences.
Christ is a hero, and we are simply there to serve.
Life Today is made possible by the supporters of Life Outreach International. Your gift will be used exclusively for the exempt purposes of Life. The ministry features specific outreaches as examples of the programs it supports and conducts. Gifts are considered to be without restriction as to use unless explicitly stipulated by the donor. The ministry is a member of the ECFA.